Hour number three of our radio program. That's right. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. Denver survives game one last night between the Nuggets and Lakers by a final score of 132-126. You have game one of the Eastern Conference Finals coming up in a few moments between the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics in Boston at TD Garden. And we know last night, Victor Wembanyama is going to have a new home, and that's going to be with the San Antonio Spurs, as they did get the number one overall pick in the draft lottery. Let's head out to the hotline right now. Welcome in Avery Johnson, who did win an NBA championship as a player with the Spurs in 1999, was a coach of the year with the Dallas Mavericks in 2006, and now does a phenomenal job with CBS Sports and CBS Sports HQ. Avery, appreciate the time. Let me start you off with the game last night. Denver in the first half really took it to Los Angeles. The Lakers played as bad of a first half as you could, but then they were right there at the end, and Denver did survive. How do you walk away last night feeling about Los Angeles after what you got to witness?
I still feel really good about the Lakers. You know, I picked the Lakers to win this series 4-2, and we'll see if they can get a split here in this next game. But I think they found a couple of things in game one that they can lean on a little bit more. First of all, I really didn't like the starting lineup. Thought it was too small. It'll be interesting if Darvin Ham inserts Hachimura into the lineup. I just think Schroeder, Russell, and Reeves, it's just too small, and it would give Anthony Davis a chance to rotate to help all with Jokic and maybe not be the primary defender on him. Aaron Gordon is a guy that Anthony Davis can guard because he's not a prolific three-point shooter. He's 0-for-3 from the three-point line and actually struggled from the free throw line. So I think Darvin Ham, this is a series for maybe Hachimura to start. I don't know if this is a series for a guy like Jared Vanderbilt. I think this is a seven-man rotation type of a series. If you need to go deeper into the bench, you probably got to lean more towards a guy like Malik Beasley, or if you want to throw Tristan Thompson in there and try to, you know, use up a couple of fouls and for about 8 minutes. So you'll see some adjustment from the Lakers. Defensively, they weren't very good to start that game. They defended a little bit better as the game went on. But when you give up 132 points in a playoff game, you're probably going to lose.
What was your reasoning, just wondering, heading into this series, why you like the Lakers in six games?
I just think, you know, overall, this will be a series where Anthony Davis is really going to put his imprint on this series as time moves on. And I just think defensively, Jokic is not going to be able to hide. Jamal Murray's not going to be able to hide. You know, obviously those guys had big games last night combining for 65 points, but I think the Lakers wear them down as the series wears on. I believe other guys, you know, like D'Angelo Russell, you know, he's been a hot and cold guy. When he's hot, the Lakers win. When he's not hot, they don't play as well. Lonnie Walker's obviously had his moments, but I just think, you know, the combination of Anthony Davis and LeBron being two-way players, they'll figure it out, especially on the defensive end, to try to slow down this Denver Nuggets team.
Avery Johnson here with us. You talked about Murray defensively. Now, I know it's tough to question LeBron James, but with under a minute to go, you're down three. You have Murray on you, 15 seconds left on the shot clock, and you pull up from three. I didn't like that selection by the king, LeBron James. How about yourself?
Didn't like that shot at all, especially had made his two free throws on the previous possession. I thought he was going to get downhill, try to get a traditional three-point play. You know, at that time, I believe Murray had five fouls. So, you know, he could have easily fouled out of the game. But I'm sure LeBron James in that situation, again, that's a put your head down, drive, fake right, go left, and just bulldoze your way into the paint. Make Jokic try to come over and help. Play a two-man game with Anthony Davis at the rim, and something great's going to happen.
You've seen a lot of great players. You've coached them. You played along with them. You watch a lot of great players as well growing up as a student of the game. When you see Nikola Jokic coach Avery Johnson and what he's been able to do the last few years, just what goes through your mind?
Man, this guy's just sensational. I mean, one of the best big men to ever play the game, just his creativity, his passing ability, the three-point range. He was 3-for-3 from three last night. I mean, when you see you dropping 34, 21, and 14 assists, and it's not your two guard or your small forward, it's your center. And the way he can run the break and lead the break, man, this guy is very unique. He's got a diversified skill set. He's maybe not the most athletic guy, but arguably, you know, two-time MVP. He's just phenomenal to watch.
Avery Johnson here with us. When we take a look at the Eastern Conference Finals, game one coming up in a bit, Heat and the Celtics. I think the Celtics are a better team. I think the Celtics should win this series. It's just going to be how much of a fight are they going to allow for Miami, who we know is such a tough team led by Jimmy Butler. I'm really curious tonight, Avery Johnson, what type of effort you see from Boston, because just in this last series, we saw them let Philadelphia hang around until there was no more margin of error for the Celtics.
Yeah, I think they're going to put forth a strong effort. I think what the Heat is a 15-point underdog in this whole series, basically. I know they're a big underdog, whatever the numbers are. This Heat team, man, this is a very dangerous team. And with all of the peaks and valleys that Jason Tatum have, I know everybody wants to talk about the 50-plus points in the closeout game against Philly. But he was really struggling going into game six, into the fourth quarter in game six, before he made those three threes. And, the peaks and valleys of Jason Tatum, the turnovers, you can't do that against Jimmy Butler. He doesn't have as many peaks and valleys. He's got more peaks. So I'm just not under the mindset that this is going to be a clear domination series by the Boston Celtics. I'm not going to be surprised if this goes seven games. I'm still picking Boston to win, but man, that Jimmy Butler, he's a problem, and he really puts his teams on his back. If he doesn't have any ankle issues in this series, this could be a scary series for the Celtics, and this is a different type of team than what they played against with Philadelphia. I can't see Jimmy Butler playing the way James Harden and Joel Embiid did. If it's a game seven in Boston, I can't see him having that type of performance.
No doubt. We know that Butler has that killer instinct, something that the Sixers have been lacking, and he'll just take over a big game, as we've seen before with Jimmy Butler. You also look at the coaching advantage, too. Spoelstra could be the best coach in the game right now. When you look at Mazzulla of the Celtics, what do you have to see from him as from a coaching perspective this series?
You know what? I think there's been some struggles there, to be brutally honest, and you've seen some of the lack of adjustments. And, you know, Joe's going to have to be on top of his game. You know, they've lost a lot of key assistants. Damon Stoudemire, nobody wants to talk about them. Obviously, Will Hardy, you know, he ended up leaving. But they lost some key guys. And obviously, Ime Udoka was the coach last year, and Joe wasn't even the head assistant. So he's going up against a guy that's going to go down as a Hall of Fame coach in Eric Spoelstra, a two-time NBA champion, has coached in the finals multiple times. This guy is, I believe, has done the best coaching job this year from start to finish. And, they have a real serious infrastructure and culture there in Miami that helps them from an accountability standpoint. So obviously the coaching edge goes to the Heat. We'll see how much of a factor that's going to be in the series.
Avery Johnson, last night when you're seeing the cards get unveiled and everyone figure out who's going to get the number one pick for Victor Wembanyama, and it goes to the San Antonio Spurs, an organization you clearly know very well. Just how'd you react to that one?
Well, I was texting a lot of my CBS HQ colleagues about that, Sports HQ colleagues, and it was just funny because I was remembering, and I was on CBS Sports HQ last night doing the draft lottery, and I was just remembering the time in 97 when the ping pong ball came up first, and I was basically running around my neighborhood, running around my house, because I was so excited that we got Tim Duncan, and I knew how that would forever change the series. And I know the excitement of the Spurs fans last night. I saw all the different replays on social media. And this is a generational talent. It'll be very interesting to see how he helps change the direction and the fortune of this franchise. They're still not a playoff team today with this current roster as constructed. But, boy, he brings a lot of hope and excitement to a franchise that's used to, you know, having foreign players like Tony Parker, who else is from France, and Manu Ginobili and Boris Diaw and Popovich and his staff knowing how to handle the likes of the David Robinsons and the Tim Duncans. And now they got another, you can't call him a Greek freak. That name's already taken, but the French freak is exciting.
And look at the praise right now. Throughout the last year, Avery Johnson, you had Steph Curry say that Victor Wembanyama is a cheat code. You had LeBron James call the kid an alien, and Giannis says he's never seen anyone like Victor Wembanyama. I just wonder what the impact individually and also for a team could be year one with the hype just being through the roof for this kid.
Well, we know basketball is a team sport, so he's got to have the other pieces around him. Fortunately, he has a Hall of Fame coach.
Yeah.
Who I'm going to be attending his Hall of Fame ceremony in August, along with my former teammate and the player that I coached, Dirk Nowitzki. So it's pretty exciting. You can see it. You're going to see it from ticket sales. The increase in, you know, regular season tickets and game day tickets. He's this guy's box office. The Spurs, I know there may be been some talk about a new arena. So who knows? He could be at the forefront of the Spurs getting a new arena. You never know. I know they have a $500 million practice facility that's almost complete. So he's going to affect ticket sales, jersey sales, restaurants. Oh, man, this guy won't be able to go anywhere. San Antonio is like a four, 7 million people. It's like a 7 million populated college town. The Spurs is the home team. There's no disloyalty from those fans down there in San Antonio. So they have another superstar to cheer for.
I know your pal, Coach Pop, Greg Popovich, is 74 years old. I guess now he's never going to retire?
Maybe when he's 90.
I'm still surprised he's coaching right now. I thought he would have walked away one of these last few years when everyone departed. But now it's like you get this potentially generational player. I don't think we'll ever see him retire.
No, he knew what you thought he was going to retire 2 years ago. He looked in that crystal ball and saw this 7'4" phenom playing ball in Spain. He said, maybe I'll stick around and just see what happens with that. So I'm excited for him. I got a text last night from the managing partner, Peter John Holt, who was very excited on TV. And so just was happy for he and RC. The one thing I will say is I'm going to ask Victor to not have demands to bring my number 6 jersey that's retired in the rafters down. But if he asks for it, he can have it. But hopefully my number 6 jersey can stay retired.
How about that? Before we let you run, Avery Johnson, you know what it's like to be looking for a job as a coach. You have 3 jobs that are open: the Suns, the Bucks, and the Sixers. If you were one of these top coaches on the market, which job out of those 3 do you think is the most attractive?
Wow, I think, you know, anytime you have a job when you can coach Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, especially with the way Devin Booker performed in the playoffs, oh my goodness, unbelievable. Anytime you can have that opportunity to coach those 2 guys and figure out what you're going to do with Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton, obviously, is a huge question mark. That team is not very far off, especially with a healthy Kevin Durant. So that would be attractive. Milwaukee, Giannis, you know, and Middleton and Holiday, those guys have won a championship. They know how to get it done. Brooke Lopez, who I coached in Brooklyn / New Jersey, he's improved his game. So I think those 2 jobs right there are at the forefront with some of these coaching job vacancies.
Yeah, Philly's a tough one right now because as good as Embiid is, he probably only has a window of a few more years to win a championship. And if they bring back James Harden, which you know Daryl Morey's going to want to do, for that team, I just don't think James Harden is the right fit because Philly needs a finisher. And you see too much of James Harden, even though he was really good last year, he's just disappearing in the postseason.
Yeah, Philly's a little tougher. I think whether James Harden resigns or not, that's obviously going to be a huge topic of conversation. But a lot of times when we're talking about replacing these guys like a James Harden, who are you going to replace him with? So you got to the Eastern Conference semifinals, game seven. You know, those guys didn't have their best game. Obviously, you know, Atlanta, Doc Rivers losing his job. But if you're not going to be able to replace him with equal talent or two or three other role players that can help fill in the gaps, then you're going to take a step back. So, but if you do re-sign him, then you got to continue to build that roster around him and talk about guys like Tobias Harris, what you're going to do with him. That's a pretty big number. But Tyrese Maxey, I think that's the way to go in terms of giving him more responsibility.
Do you think this is it for Damon in Portland? Because a lot of people look at the draft lottery last night. They get a big asset, the third overall pick. Clearly, it wasn't the number one overall pick to go get Victor Wembanyama. But do you feel like a split should be coming with Dame, or is he just going to keep on staying loyal and sticking there in Portland?
Well, I'll finish with this. I've been the one over the last 2 years that have been saying Dame is gone. He's going to request a trade. And I've been wrong for the last 2 years. I've been shockingly wrong because the team is not going anywhere. They're absolutely not going anywhere. So with Scoot Henderson, if he lands in that third spot, you'll give them a chance to get back and hit the reset button and do similar to what the Spurs have done. You know, they've lost for a couple of years and they've landed on a really great player. But this team currently constructed, Portland, if the season were to start today, even with Scoot Henderson on the roster, they're not even a play-in team. So I'm going to say it again for the third year in a row. I'm going to expect Dame Lillard to maybe request the trade so that he can try to end his legendary career with playing deeper in the playoffs and maybe getting on a team that can play for a championship to try to cement his career.
Well, third time's a charm for your case. Last one, Avery Johnson, then we'll let you run. Really do appreciate you doing this. From a coaching perspective, I know you know Steve Kerr very well. Getting Draymond Green and Jordan Poole back on the same page if they're on the same team next year is enormous. How would you try to kind of mend that relationship this summer? Because even Draymond admitted last night that he was in the wrong and it probably did derail their season this year.
I believe if I was the general manager, and I know Bob Myers is taking some time off, you got to move Jordan Poole. I just think in the back of his mind, you're never going to get that video back of his mind. I don't know if they can survive with those guys being on the same team. Draymond couldn't really be himself. I've heard him on interviews. He couldn't really lead the way he wanted to lead because he always felt like he needed to apologize for that punch. So I think the best case moving forward, find Jordan Poole a new home, bring in another shooter that has a clean slate with the Warriors and specifically Draymond Green, and then see if you can try to move forward with the team as currently constructed. You still have the Splash Brothers. They still can splash. They still one of the top backcourts in the country. James Wiseman was a big miss, so you'll have to continue to figure out how to build your support staff and role players. But I think finding Poole a new home, I think it's going to be better for him and it's going to be better for the Warriors.
Avery Johnson, make sure you check him out, CBS Sports, CBS Sports HQ. We always appreciate the time, Avery.
Okay, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
It is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. So we just had Avery Johnson on, and he's coached in this league, won a Coach of the Year award with the Dallas Mavericks, and clearly was a part of the Nets coaching staff too, and then spent many years as a player and won an NBA championship with the San Antonio Spurs back in 1999. So he's seen the game from a bunch of different angles and a bunch of different perspectives, whether it was a player, whether it was a coach, or as an analyst as well. And I asked him, is there any way to rectify this situation between Draymond Green and Jordan Poole? And he thinks that it's the best course of action this summer for the Warriors to actually trade Jordan Poole. So let's work backwards here, and then we'll get to more of what Avery Johnson had to say. Let's go to Draymond Green last night. This was on Stephen A's World. This was the Manning cast that Stephen A was pretty much trying to do last night. I watched that, Hickey, and it's the same critique that I'll give of the Manning cast. There's moments where it's really good, it's engaging, it's fun early in the game, but when you get later into that game and the game actually matters, it almost feels as if the game is on in the background. And I was watching a little bit of the Stephen A broadcast, thought it was enjoyable, and then when the game got good, I said, okay, let me flip on over to Mike Breen and Mr. I don't vote Nikola Jokic for the MVP, Mark Jackson, and Jeff Van Gundy last night. So that's what I did. But here's Draymond Green last night, and he was asked by Stephen A. if the Warriors were eliminated in the second round because of this whole situation and how much it lingered with Draymond punching Jordan Poole before the season started.
We're not playing right now because when you speak about the fouling, when you speak about all of the slippage that we had as a team on the road, not being able to come together, none of those things happen if that doesn't happen, because the voice that I am and the departments that I lead this team in, there was a ton of slippage due to me sitting back, me not saying anything, me trying to allow that situation to play itself out and giving it time to heal. Well, while you're giving it all of that time, guess what? I would say probably by February, I started to feel like myself again to speak more. But guess what? There was 5 months of a season where slippage has just been occurring. And by February, if that slippage has been going on that long, you are who you are at that point. You've built those habits. You've built bad habits. That is who you are now. So to try to correct them then, it's like, okay, you may get a little better. We did. We ended up in the second round of the playoffs, but not at a championship level.
So I guess that is Draymond Green last night starting to try and fix this relationship with Jordan Poole and kind of in a bizarre way make him look like he's doing the right thing or being the good guy in this situation, even though this whole scenario that played out this year is at the fault of really only like three people that you could blame. Draymond number one, and then also Bob Myers and Steve Kerr for practically doing nothing and letting this thing linger and never really putting any punitive action on Draymond Green. But I guess that failure to do anything, Hickey, it shows you two things. One, either they're just afraid of Draymond, or two, the way that we even think you may need to start to move on from Draymond, we always know about the impact that Draymond has made on those teams. They clearly still believe, and you heard Steve Kerr say it the other day, that if they're going to be a championship team and a championship contender, they're going to need Draymond Green. So it's almost at the point, I know we had a big conversation on this yesterday, that if you're going to, and I think we'd all agree, having Bob Myers still on that team next year is the best thing for the Golden State Warriors. Well, if you have Bob Myers there, I don't think Bob Myers, if he's still running the show, is getting rid of Draymond Green. I don't think he has the heart to do it with the relationships he's formed with Steph, Draymond, and also Klay Thompson. So if you have to operate under that, if you want Bob Myers back, that means you're going to need Draymond Green back. It's up to Bob and Draymond to mend that relationship with Jordan Poole. And if Jordan Poole doesn't think that relationship can be fixed and salvaged, then yeah, you may have to trade Jordan Poole, even though I would argue that Jordan Poole, if the Warriors are going to win another championship, is more important to the Warriors than Draymond Green is in the year of 2023. This is a tough situation, Hickey, because so much time has lingered where you got to, I feel like very little can be done to save this relationship. And it's almost as if you have to pick one or the other. And with everything I've seen with the Warriors, I can't give them the benefit of the doubt that they're going to side with Jordan Poole. They're going to try to either make this work or they're going to trade Jordan Poole inevitably.
Yeah, I don't really get at this point that you how you can mend fences or make things better just because it's like basically a year too late. Steve Kerr talked about it. Draymond talking about it. Like the opportunity to actually close that wound and heal the divisiveness between him and Jordan Poole was days after the punch happened. It's not now when it happened in October and we're talking here in May and he's talking to Stephen A. and trying to put out there that, oh, yeah, you know, the team was never the same after that. And, you know, I wasn't able to lead because no one could really listen to my voice because everyone, anytime I talked, would always think about the punch first. It's like your opportunity to fix that, it's already, I think it's already come and gone. So if you're Jordan Poole, like, are you even, I don't personally think he's even receptive at this point to hearing an apology or truly, truly willing to put it behind him.
The only thing I will say, we've seen many times before in life where people get into fights and then you end up becoming friendly with the person. And there was already a previous relationship there where it was talked about in that article in The Ringer, I'm pretty sure, that Jordan Poole, if I'm remembering if it was from The Ringer, Jordan Poole kind of looked up to Draymond as if he was a big brother, especially before this incident, the year prior when they were dealing with all these injuries and you saw the emergence of Jordan Poole, and Draymond was big in that locker room of helping out Jordan Poole. So there was a relationship to some point, and that's probably what makes it stings even more for Jordan Poole because this is a guy that he really liked and really respected. But I'll just tell you this, and I'm not comparing necessarily this situation to Draymond and Jordan Poole, make it apples to apples, but in this situation, my dad actually, I'll tell you a funny story here, Hickey. My dad's best friend, you want to know how they became best friends? You want to know their first meeting? They got into a fight. They're at a sleepaway camp. My dad's best friend, who I call Uncle Neil, he's a few years older. He was a counselor. My dad was a camper, and they were playing dodgeball. And my dad had a cannon for an arm, and he would just be pelting kids and picking kids off. And he was new to the camp in 9th or 10th grade or something like that, because his old camp shut down. And my dad kind of had a target on his back being the new guy. And I guess someone like barely hit my father with the dodgeball on his foot, and my dad didn't even feel it, or he was just cheating, which would not surprise me either. And he kept on like throwing the dodgeballs, and my dad's best friend Neil now grabbed him from like the back of his shirt and said, "You're out. You lost." And they ended up getting into a fight, like an actual fight, like a fist fight. And throughout the years, they became really good friends. And I call this guy my uncle, Uncle Neil. And my dad and him are like attached at the hip now. So maybe Bob Gelb and Neil Orban need to go out to the Bay Area here, Hot Take Hickey. And maybe they need to talk to Draymond Green and Jordan Poole on how you save this relationship. Because those are two lifelong friends that started a friendship with the fight and they were cursing each other out. So I think I just solved the problem with the Golden State Warriors. Bob Myers, give Bob Gelb a call. Give us some money too and we'll fix this thing in a second.
I was just going to say, make sure you charge a high hourly rate to make sure that, you know, those fences are mended and make sure there's extra time that, you know, you really need to talk to each other to make sure though, you know, the relationship is truly better.
Now, I will say this though, all kidding aside, I do think you could fix this, but I don't think the Warriors will go about it the right way in order to assure that this gets fixed, because they're intimidated of Draymond Green. They are, so unless if Draymond puts it upon himself to fix this, and I don't know if I could, I can't trust Draymond here. Avery Johnson's probably right that you're going to have to trade one or another, and it will probably be Jordan Poole over Draymond Green, even though I think if you're going to get rid of one over the other, it should be Draymond that you're getting rid of instead of Jordan Poole.
And the problem with trading Jordan Poole right now is that you are not getting anywhere near the value you probably should get.
It'd be to shed the salary.
No, right. But also, too, you want something of return for a team that's trying to win a championship next year, right?
Yeah.
This is not a team that's, oh, we'll take the picks and 5 years
player.
From now, hope it helps. Like, you're trading Jordan Poole at his absolute lowest value point.
What I mean by that is you're probably trading Jordan Poole. You'll get a little bit back, and then whatever you use to get back, you'll use that to go make another move. But probably what's going to happen, whether it's a draft capital that you get or you'll get some whatever role players there. So we'll see what happens. It is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll update you on the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio next with the news brief.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Time.
time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
You can think of O'Reilly Auto Parts for your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Let's listen up to Nikola Jokic as the Joker's Nuggets are up 1-0 against the Lakers after game one of the Western Conference Finals last night. And the Joker says it was very important to start the game fast.
Playoff, I mean, we need to be aggressive. We need to win a game. So, especially in front of home crowd, especially because they won two game ones. So it was, I think it's being aggressive. It's a normal right now.
Hickey, I know I probably shouldn't be shocked by this because of just the way that it feels like every NBA game, unless it's the Sixers and Celtics in a game seven or anytime the Suns are in an elimination game. But even with no matter how bad it looks through the first half, it does seem as if every NBA game does come down to the final 5 minutes or so. But last night when this goes into halftime and it's 72-54 and you know Denver's a better team than Los Angeles and how Denver and Jokic was just having a great game, I was shocked that when we got into the fourth quarter and you had a few, like 8 minutes to go, that, okay, there was an actual chance that Denver was going to lose that game last night.
Even like with, like, you always think, okay, maybe the team like the Lakers will come out strong and start the second half and you go on a little 5-0 run, just give yourself a little belief. And to the Nuggets' credit, like, they came out, answered any sort of punch that the Lakers gave, actually increased that lead up to 20. I think it was
106-92 entering the fourth.
And I think with 3 minutes left, I believe it was 21. 3 or 4 minutes left in the third quarter is 21 points. So you're at that point, you think, okay, we survived. We weathered the storm that the Lakers are going to throw at us. We'll cruise in, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, the Lakers, a lot of credit, fought back pretty late in the game.
And you look at the numbers last night for the Joker. He had 34 points, 21 rebounds, and 14 assists. And then for Anthony Davis, he had 40 points with 10 rebounds and 2 blocks in the game. Here is the Joker saying that Anthony Davis was just tremendous.
He's really, 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 first of all, talented. He's a role threat. He can play in a pocket. He can play ISO. He can play on the post. So he's really, really talented. Probably the most skilled guy if you think about the size and what he can do with the ball and how good mid-range or shooter he is and how he is attacking the glass. So I think probably one of the most talented player in the league.
It's so crazy because you watched that game last night and you just saw the pathetic performance by the Lakers in the first half and then how they made it a game late. And part of me walks away from that game, Hickey, where I go, all right, the Lakers next game you would think aren't going to be that bad in the first half. So I'm intrigued to see, even though I believe Denver's going to win the series, that how game two plays out and if this is 1-1 or is it 2-0. Going back to Crypto.com Arena Center, whatever that building is named. But then in the other sentence, it's like, man, you got 40 points from Anthony Davis, and you still needed to come on back to put yourself in a position where you had a shot of going out there and just getting that victory last night, and you ended up losing. So it's kind of mixed feelings in terms of the game.
And you got a big performance from Rui Hachimura. You had Austin Reeves hitting some big-time shots late. LeBron was solid. Like, it's just like, yeah, you look at that, and you got some really solid contributions from a lot of players that, again, you kind of feel like it was a wasted, even though at one point you're down 21, you get it to a three-point game. Like, wow, here we go. It's, you know, this is at least you get some good feelings going to game two. But you look back, it's like, that may have been the game that if you kind of look back in this series and the Nuggets win in 6 or 7, maybe that was the one that they kind of let get away because of a very lethargic first half.
And also, they got the magic number because we've been talking about this all throughout the year. Heading into last night, in Anthony Davis's career with the Lakers, in games where he scored at least 29 points, the Lakers as a team are 56-19. And they got at least 29 last night, and now that record does fall by one game and goes to 56-20. And it was a great performance by Anthony Davis, but that first half killed him, and LeBron James says the Lakers lost that game in the first half.
Yeah, I mean, it took us a half to get into the game, and that was pretty much the ball game right there. We got to understand that you know, we got to start from the tip-off, you know, and they punched us in the mouth to start.
And let's get to LeBron on the key to winning game two.
They're 1-0, and we have to come back with desperation going into game two. We have to play better. We have to rebound better. I thought we did a good job of not turning the ball over. That's one thing we've been very conscious about in the postseason. But we've been better in transition tonight. We wasn't that great in the first half. We cleaned it up in the second half. So we need to be better at all facets of the game.
I know we've seen teams come back from being down 2-0 in this postseason so far, Hickey. Golden State in the first round up against the Sacramento Kings. But with how much better, in my opinion, Denver is than Los Angeles on paper with the entirety of the roster, I really think this series is going to get decided coming up tomorrow night. Because if Denver goes up 2-0, I have a less than 5% chance, and that may be benevolent, of seeing how the Lakers find a way to win this series.
Especially with how good Denver's been at home. They're undefeated so far in the postseason. Now the Lakers are as well. But again, you know, we have seen the Lakers, part of their road to getting here has been winning games on the road. It's really tough to do. And you drop game two, and now you have to win all your home games plus at least one on the road. Yeah, it's rough.
Anthony Davis says Nikola Jokic was as good as advertised.
I mean, he's a two-time MVP. He's very skilled. You know, obviously, as his numbers show, made some tough shots. You know, we just try to make it tough for him, you know, switching up matchups and schemes on him. But, you know, he's been playing well through the entire season and, you know, especially in this playoffs.
It's kind of crazy, even though Anthony Davis is really trying to be positive there. Like, oh, yeah, he's been playing well through the entire season in the playoffs. This dude's been playing more than well. And I know AD talked about the MVPs that he's won. But I keep on feeling, Hickey, and this I think works out great for the Nuggets, that even with all that Nikola Jokic has accomplished, he still has something to prove, because it does feel as if there are a decent amount of people that keep on questioning this guy. When you watch him play, he's just flat out ridiculous. He's a unicorn on a basketball court.
Andrew Perloff said something today on the Maggie Perloff show that I thought at first was ridiculous, but the more you think about it, I'm like,
wait, now
he's
hold
actually
on.
Right.
You and Perloff are back on talking terms?
Why wouldn't we be?
Well, you were very mad at him yesterday when he came after you for that horrible peanut butter.
Well, that was a terrible take by him.
That was a great take by him.
That was awful by him.
This is the problem with you. When everyone's telling you something sucks and you think, and you're the only one that thinks it's good, that's when you know that it's problematic. But anyway, tell me what Perloff said.
He said today that the playoffs are a coming out party for Nikola Jokic. And it makes no sense.
He's
for,
right, though.
Again, a two-time MVP and a guy who's been in the playoffs each of the last, what, four
right.
or 5 years?
He's 100% right.
But I'm with him. I can't really argue that. Now, especially really in this series, because not a lot of people pay attention to, and rightfully so, Timberwolves, they think, okay, gentlemen sweep. Suns, even, that was a series where there was not a lot of intrigue. Now it's LeBron and AD and the Warriors.
I think there was intrigue in the Suns series.
And now people are finally recognizing, wow, Jokic actually is, when you watch him, a really damn good player.
It's not that people are finally realizing it. It's to the minority of people who are just idiots that go, he doesn't have a championship, so he can't win one. Like, that's what it is. And they try to take away from him winning two MVPs just because he doesn't have the championship. We saw the same thing with Giannis, but I can't say Perloff's wrong, because that's not going to go away. And there's still going to be these idiots out there that question him until he wins that championship. And I think it's happening this year.
I don't know the number offhand, but just from a feel perspective, I does not feel like the Nuggets were on national TV a lot this year.
I don't know what the number is.
Even last year. So it's another thing where it's like a coming out party. It's also like, I do think this is now people's first real chance to sit down, lock in, and say, wow, this guy's actually really good, because he's not on TNT or ESPN every other game
games,
for
though.
30.
You can find those games.
Not really. People are paying for a league pass.
Okay, there's other ways to find those games. If you want to watch Nikola Jokic, you can. There's just a lot of people that comment that don't have any clue what they're talking about, and they don't watch the games, and therefore, since they haven't, if they haven't seen it with their own eyes, they just make these ridiculous claims. Daryl Morey confirms that Joel Embiid was upset that Doc Rivers was fired.
They had a strong relationship. I mean, they're, you know, I have to make tough calls all the time with trades. You know, Joel was disappointed in, you know, some of it was he didn't know the player we were getting in the trade who ended up helping us, but he was disappointed in the players that went out. I think it's natural to be very close with the people in the locker room. He was very close with Coach Rivers. And, yeah, he was shocked about the change. And, and it's my job to help convince him that the new coach is someone that he'll have a great relationship with as well.
So I watched that entire press conference, and I didn't watch it live, but I kept on seeing reaction on social media. What a bad press conference by Daryl Morey. So when I keep on seeing those tweets and those social media posts over and over again, I go, okay, let me sit down and watch the entire thing. That dude is lost, Daryl Morey. How don't you talk to Joel Embiid before you make the decision to fire Doc Rivers? That's just a bad job. And he wouldn't say it 110%, but they're 1,000% interested in bringing back James Harden. He's like, that's the plan. But then he kept on using negotiations and not allowing to talk to things as reasons why he didn't expand much further. But I heard Daryl Morey throughout that entire press conference, and I go, wow. It just confirmed every thought I had of him, of being one of the most overrated executives in sports.